It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Everybody, raise your glasses to the senator.
To Ted Kennedy.
In the White House in 72.
We're family. There's no more important word. We share a lifetime bond.
We have a situation here on Chappaquiddick.
There's been an accident. We can't find Mary Jo.
What happened last night?
I was driving.
Do you have any idea? Court of public opinion will have your head on a stake.
We tell the truth, or at least our version of it.
I want you to know that every effort possible was made to save her.
What do we do to help the senator?
A dead body holds a lot of secrets. Those can be the difference between guilt and innocence.
Are you saying that there's a possibility that maybe she didn't drown?
I could have had her out of that car in 25 minutes if I got the call. But no one called.
Sometimes the path you're on isn't always the path you choose.
What's stopping you from making that choice yourself?
I can't watch you do this, Ted.
You what, Joe? Self-destruct.
Oh my God, what have I done?
Sandy Rios with you, and that's a trailer from a brand new movie coming out April the 6th on the story of a man, a junior senator from the state of Massachusetts, a member of a very famous family, the Kennedys, very powerful, highly respected, in fact, loved in many, many quarters. The Kennedys could do no wrong, and yet their son, the junior senator from from Massachusetts, was involved in a situation that happened one night where a young woman drowned. We're going to tell the story of that. And it occurs to me when I think about July of 1969 that many of you weren't even born yet. And some of you may have been born, but you don't really know the story. Ted Kennedy went on to be one of at least the most famous senators in the Senate. He served his life in the Senate. He did a lot of things. I would argue not good things. But maybe you didn't know that when he was a young man, something that probably should have destroyed his career happened to him. And this movie tells that story. Mark Chardy has joined us today. He's the producer and director of this new movie called Chappaquiddick. Mark has a great resume. He is a producer of movies like The Rookie, Miracle, Invincible, and Secretariat. I've asked him to join us. He's based in Hollywood, produces movies all the time, and this one looks like a good one. I haven't seen it yet. But it looks like it has the taste and eloquence of a man like Mark. Mark, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Sandy.
Mark, you know what? Of all the stories one could choose, and there are many, there are endless amounts of stories, as many as there are people. Why, for you, this story?
You know, obviously, some of the movies that you named, you know, I had a long deal at Walt Disney Pictures and made a lot of sports dramas, inspirational. About 3.5 years ago, I raised some private equity and went out on my own to do independent movies. And, you know, this was just a script that I fell in love with. You know, there was no agenda to it. It wasn't to make a political statement. It was just a great script. And, you know, a bold one. And so we acquired it and went on to the road of trying to put it together and making it. And, you know, there was probably some concern, you know, of how Hollywood would respond to it. But I have to say, everybody that read it really, really loved it. agents, you know, managers, you know, everybody associated with the talent, and the talent really loved it as well. So, you know, something that just we were passionate about.
You know, it's I have to say that I met you personally at CPAC in Washington a few weeks ago. And the thing of it is, everyone listening to me, Mark, knows that if you live and work in Hollywood, certainly in the movie industry, if it seems to me that even if you go near conservatives, there are cooties to be had, that you can be banned, shunned, never get work again. Were you not concerned about that?
You know, I think it was more of a concern of like how would talent view it? And would they look at it just on the merits of a great script, or would they look at it politically? And, you know, I think there were some actors maybe a little nervous to take on the role of Ted Kennedy, but for the most part, everyone really embraced it, and it wasn't a political statement. I mean, there were some, you know, questions about, you know, oh, do we really want to go there? You know, Kennedy was this, Kennedy was that, but, you know, listen, it's part of history, and the way we framed it, you know, you haven't seen the movie yet, but it all takes place in 1 week, and it was during the moon landing. And for a lot of people that don't know the story or have never heard the word Chappaquiddick because they're younger, this goes about telling the story and giving a peek behind the curtain. And it's really interesting. Again, we didn't, you know, we stuck to the facts. We didn't editorialize. You know, the writers used the inquest as their main source, you know, for the screenplay. And these were young, probably very liberal guys from Dallas. And they had, you know, during a Kennedy assassination, I think there was something about Kennedy's assassination and the word Chappaquiddick came up, and they just became interested in that word they'd never heard, and, you know, wrote this script. So, you know, it became kind of apolitical in a way that it was just telling the story. And you know, again, we loved the script.
Well, I have to say, I'm glad for that. Who would want... I really wouldn't want to see a movie that was editorializing on what I believe is true about Ted Kennedy in his later years. I really would just want to see what the story was. It is dramatic enough, and it should have interest to Americans of all stripes. And we're going to get into the story in just a second, but I'm just curious to know, I know you read the script, but did you know much about this story before you took it on yourself?
Yeah. You know, I was, without giving my age away, but I was 8 years old, and I remember the moon landing and bits and pieces of it and where I was. And then I just remember that word Chappaquiddick. And then, you know, over the years, you know, I knew the basics. I knew the Wikipedia version. I didn't know kind of what, you know, the brain trust that descended, you know, to try to fix his political career and, you know, some say cover up. And listen, it was a different time then as well. You could really exert political power and will. And, you know, Kennedy was beloved up in that area. And, you know, it just happened, something that happened very, very quickly. You know, there's a suspended sentence, you know, a couple days later, and he was, you know, out of there. There was no autopsy on the body. You know, things today that would, you know, obviously not been able to fly that, you know, was able to be brushed under the table then.
So you read this, a story written by Taylor Allen and Andrew Logan. You were compelled by it, uh-huh. But you know, then you got to make a movie. So I'm guessing, look, Mark, I've never produced a movie, but I do a radio show every day. And I know that I take in probably 50 times more information than I ever use because it helps me to, informs me on how to present what I do use. What did you do? How broadly did you read? Did you talk to family members? Did you go to Massachusetts and interview the Chappaquiddick, the Kopechne family or anything like that?
No, really. I mean, listen, a lot of people are not with us anymore. You know, I tried to read all the books I could just to get a basis and pull up every story I could. And the writers did most of the research. I didn't, you know, the script was finished when we got it. I mean, we did more developing on it, but essentially those guys had done the research. So, but I tried to educate myself. And, you know, there were people that had reached out to us, some we connected with, some we didn't. One of the central people that we did want to speak to was the scuba diver that found her. And it was extraordinary. John Ferrer, you know, we had to track down. He was traveling the country. And we got to speak to him and spoke to him for 45 minutes. And it was amazing to talk to him because he was recounting it like it was yesterday. And, you know, listen, a lot of some of what we contend, and even though we don't know exactly what happened or, you know, anything. I mean, only Mary Jo and Ted would know that. But, you know, I think his contention was the way he found her in the car and that the fact that there was pink froth around her nose and mouth, that he believed that she did not drown and that she died of asphyxiation. So whether it was, he said, listen, whether it was 5 minutes or 10 minutes or an hour, he felt like, you know, someone could live in that pocket of air for at least, you know, or up to maybe an hour or two. So we, you know, you haven't seen the movie, but, you know, we don't put a statement in there. In fact, the way we show her in the car, it's almost as if, you know, it could be perceived as a dream that he's having and or you know, flashing back, and we don't really use time. So, but it's really compelling to kind of juxtapose the fact that he, you know, went to bed and without reporting this and got to sleep and, you know, while she could have been, you know, trapped in that car. It's pretty harrowing. And, you know, we just, again, presented, you know, in a way that didn't make it a statement, but more of a question. And it's really compelling because, you know, obviously what he didn't do correctly was not report it for 10 hours.
And, Mark, we're going to, and I want to get it. Mm-hmm. I do want to get into that. I want to get into more detail in a second because I know, I mean, and I'm going to leave it up to you what part of the story to tell and what not to tell because we want people to see the movie. But I do want to know, okay, so you said the writers did most of the vetting, but when you make a movie like this, like any movie, mm-hmm. biography or whatever, if you're writing something, some biography, you have to invent dialogue or, you know, you have to sort of add to things. What's your guideline for that? I mean, were you looking to entertain or were you looking to recreate history or both?
You know, it's always a combination of both, right? You know, your main, you have to entertain people. It's, you know, close to 2 hours that you know, you're going in there to be entertained and maybe educated. So it's a combination. You want to try to be as close to the facts as you can, especially on a story like this. But clearly we didn't, you know, the whole incident wasn't mic'd for that week. So you have to, I mean, we did know that the kind of war room existed and the brain trust that came in, and you could, we did an imagining of some of the things that might've gone on and been discussed. We know it resulted in, you know, a speech at the end of our movie, that we recreated like to the word. You know, we also know that there were calls made from Martha's Vineyard to Hyannisport. And, you know, again, Joe Kennedy had a stroke, so but you just try to kind of put a reimagining or fill in blanks of what these conversations might have been.
So if you were to say in a word, if you were to write what your goal was in making this movie, what would you say?
I mean, I'd say entertain and educate, both those words. And I think any true story, you have to have that combination. But it's fascinating, right, to get a peek behind the curtain of how this political thriller, you know, unfolded. Again, it all takes place in the week. And again, it all took place when the moon landing was happening. So JFK's kind of greatest achievement was juxtaposed with Ted Kennedy's probably worst moment, obviously.
Isn't that something?
And it all played out. Yeah.
I never thought about it that way. I mean, actually, when you say it that way, we just have to sit with that for a second. And people that don't know that time, you know, Mark, that bears sitting on just for a second. So the moon launch happened. It was just an incredible event. The whole world is watching. Certainly, we only had three channels on television at that time. Everyone was watching this incredible feat. And John Kennedy was the one who, you know, pushed for the space program. So you're saying, and at the same time, his younger brother, in the same week, at the same time, is... Really showing a different side of the Kennedy family, shall we say. And we're going to take a break here. My guest is Mark Chardy. And when we come back, Mark, let's tell the story a little bit more detail, as much as you feel comfortable telling it without giving away everything, because Chappaquiddick is coming out April the 6th. And it's something that I think all of you will want to see for the sake of not only entertainment, but also an important part of our history. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
On the weekend of July 18, I was on Martha's Vineyard Island, participating with my nephew, Joe Kennedy. As for 30 years, my family has participated in the annual Edgartown Sailing Regatta. Only reasons of health prevented my wife from accompanying me. On Chappaquiddick Island, off Martha's Vineyard, I attended on Friday evening, July 18th, a cookout I had encouraged and helped sponsor for a devoted group of Kennedy campaign secretaries. When I left the party around 11:15 p.m., I was accompanied by one of these girls, Miss Mary Jo Kopechne. Mary Jo was one of the most devoted members of the staff of Senator Robert Kennedy. She worked for him for 4 years and was broken up over his death. For this reason, and because she was such a gentle, kind, and idealistic person, all of us tried to help her feel that she still had a home with the Kennedy family. There is no truth whatever, to the widely circulated suspicions of immoral conduct that have been leveled at my behavior and hers regarding that evening. There has never been a private relationship between us of any kind. I know of nothing in Mary Jo's conduct on that or any other occasion. And the same is true of the other girls at that party that would lend any substance to such ugly speculation about their character. Nor was I driving under the influence of liquor.
All right, that's the voice of a real senator, and that is a real story, Senator Ted Kennedy. And he's speaking in July of 1969, which is right after the accident or whatever, the drowning of Mary Jo Kopechne. Mark Ciardi is my guest, and the new movie, Chappaquiddick, is coming out to tell this story. Mark, what are your thoughts when you hear that?
Wow. I mean, how close our actor, you know, came to the cadence and you know, recreating. But as far as the statement, listen, it's spin, right? And for a large degree. What the purpose of that speech was to save his political career. And, you know, it was masterful in the way that it turned him almost into a victim. And, you know, by talking about all the things that people are innuendo and this, and he's not drinking. Well, that's probably not correct. I mean, I think it was pretty common knowledge that he was drinking, you know, that whole day and into the night, and there was a party. And again, we didn't go into any kind of affair or, you know, and didn't even get into, you know, him over drinking, but you know, it's probably assumed that some of that stuff could have happened. But, you know, we tried to actually make that evening a little more emotional about what, you know, he and Mary Jo Kopechne talked about. Because I think you have to have some of that in a story, or you just can, you know, you won't be able to follow your, you know, protagonist. So that was a little of the trick in the movie of, you know, not turning off where you just, you know, he's despicable. You know, we tried to humanize Ted that night and the events that happened, but it was a tragedy, and he was really responsible for that. So,
well, he was 37 and he was married. So he makes an excuse about why his wife wasn't with him. And then she was 28 and she had worked for his brother. So he tells us that. Okay. So they're at this party and we know they leave together. That's a fact. Well, where does your movie begin? Or is that a secret?
Yeah, no. We, it all takes place in a week, like I said, and it starts the day before when we have an opening scene when he's in the Senate. In an interview he does, and then he kind of arrives on the island the next day to participate in the regatta. And what they did is they combined that weekend. It was regatta weekend in Martha's Vineyard, and they had kind of a weekend with, you know, some of the boiler room girls they called them, who had worked on Bobby's campaign. Bobby had been assassinated a year before that, so, you know, it was a little bit in his memory as well. You know, and then the events, happen over the next few days. So the accident, in fact, we have title cards that say Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and it takes you through, you know, really reminds people that it's all in a week. And we have, you know, the framing of the moon landing as well. So, and a lot of Walter Cronkite is in there, a lot of stock footage. So there's that feeling of, you know, recreating history and, you know, using the real voices that people would, you know, remember from that time. So it really gave, you know, a time and place to the events.
Okay, well, let's tell a little bit more of the story. They leave the party together. We don't know why. So it was somewhere between 11:30 and 1, and it's a Friday night. And what happened?
They, you know, we kind of, again, the only people that know exactly what happened are Ted and Mary Jo, but there was a sighting. There was a deputy police officer named Huck Look, and he was there on Chappaquiddick Island. And at the intersection, there's a main road, right, that kind of loops, you know, through the center of Chappaquiddick Island. And then there's kind of a dirt road, which is called Dyke Road. And it's unpaved, it's gravelly, and you take that down probably close to a quarter to a half mile down, and then that's where you come to the bridge. And there's a house right near it called the Dyke House, and it's like 50 yards from the bridge. But the officer, Ted's car had stopped, and the officer thought that he had car trouble. So he gets out of the car, because he sees a car there, and was going out to find out or to help. And then that car took off down that dirt road. Now, we have them where they were kind of talking out in the field somewhere before. And then I think the idea, and maybe why he was taking that road, was that maybe they were going to go to the beach, because that Dyke Road then leads up. There's a little bridge that goes over Poacher Pond, and then there's the beach. So we, you know, the assumption is maybe he was going to take a drive down there with her. And he obviously didn't make it. So we have a scene with the two of them beforehand. Then they get into the car. You have that little incident with the police officer getting out, and then he takes off down that road, probably at a higher speed than he wanted to be. And, you know, maybe that combination of drink and you know, again, we don't know what happened, but we're just putting the pieces together. And he hits that bridge that kind of went on a corner, and he hit the bridge. The car went down. The front went down first, and then kind of went upside down. So, and it was completely submerged, the tires barely covered.
This was a pond. You know, I guess I always kind of thought it was an inlet, like from the ocean, but it's a pond. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming it's not huge. I don't know.
No, it is kind of it connects. I mean, the geography is, the water kind of comes in and out, but it's like a small little kind of footbridge that a car can go over in bikes and everything. To the beach, kind of like a strand of beach. So if you looked at it in like Google Maps, you'll see exactly where it is. But no, it was pretty small body of water that it went into. But you know, again, there's currents, and at night, I'm sure it was very difficult to navigate.
All right. So all we know is that nobody knew. Bottom line, Mary Jo Kopechne drowned, and nobody. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how Ted Kennedy left and did not report it, and I'll let you tell the details of that. But I think the first time the public knew, someone who reported that there was a car off the bridge, and that there was somebody inside of it. How did the scuba diver know to go down there?
I mean, this is part of the indictment on his actions, because it was the next morning. There was a father and son that were fishing, and they spotted the car, and that was probably about 8 or 9 a.m. And that young boy then ran to the Dyke House to call authorities. And that's the same house that probably Ted walked past after the incident. There was a light on at this house. He, decided not to report it. And, you can only assume why he might not have. But, he contended that he, had a concussion, and he didn't know what his senses were. But he wakes up the next morning, and he's having brunch with some of the folks that he was involved in the regatta with. So it doesn't look great, at all. But a young boy and his father kind of saw the car. They called the police. That island kind of then lit up, and they tried to find out where he was. At the same time, that's when, Ted called, the Officer Arena, who was kind of the sheriff in town, and then said, I'm going to come in and make a statement. So he came into he didn't go to the scene. He went to the police station and then prepared a statement with another lawyer.
And I would assume that a good part of the drama in your movie is those hours before he reports it. What he actually did. Yeah. I mean, do his friends speak about, will they speak about that? Did you get any cooperation from people who were close to the Kennedys to tell what they remembered, or was this drawn from other people's writings?
Yeah, it's really just there was an inquest, so that there was a lot. 6 months after the event, that's when, and to see if there's any criminal wrongdoing, they had this inquest, kind of to appease the noise around it, really. And so that's when a lot of people kind of went on record. But his actions after, he after the accident, again, we don't know how he got it. He doesn't remember how he got out of the car. And then she was trapped in the car. And again, it probably was a lot, more difficult to navigate. Listen, if you've been drinking at all and the car is upside down and, you're disoriented, somehow he got out of the car. Whether he attempted, he said he attempted to rescue her. He might have. But he then got out, on the side of the road or the side of the pond and then walked back up that gravel road in the middle of the night and took a left and then went to the dike house. Now that's probably over a mile that he's walking after midnight. And, he got his two friends, Joseph Gargan and Paul Markham, and they came back to the scene. Evidently they went in and tried to attempt a rescue. They couldn't. And the idea was that they said, you've got to report this. Somehow he got then from Chappaquiddick over to Edgartown, in Martha's Vineyard. And there's different accounts at how they crossed over there. He said he swam across, which I think a lot of people, maybe joke about the fact that, he was able to swim, with a back yes. brace on and maybe yeah. drinking 150 yards in the middle of the night.
But he couldn't save her.
Reported that. Yeah, exactly. So it's, we just put the different evidence together and presented a story that I think is really compelling. But he went back to his hotel room, and I think he called Hyannisport several times, and then he went to bed, and then he got up and he was having brunch with the same two guys realized he hadn't reported it. And I guess they got them out of this brunch that he was having, and they went into the hotel room, and there was loud arguing that some of the guests heard, and then he reported it. So that's what we do know that's on record. And then, we fill in the blanks of what they might have said or not said and create a narrative.
Did you go back into who Mary Jo was? I mean, what do we know other than what he's just told us about her?
Well, what's interesting, you asked earlier about the family. The family did reach out to us. The Gopecki family, which is kind of led by her first cousin, who was 4 years older than Mary Jo, and very close to her. And that cousin's son have kind of held the torch for Mary Jo. They had reached out before we shot the film. They had sent a book that they had done called Remembering Mary Jo. And, they just wanted to make sure that her memory was, that she was a real person, that she was, intelligent and funny and everything. And so, when we finished the movie, we reached back out to them and wanted them to see the film. And so we screened for them about 3 weeks ago, the Gopecki family. And I thought that, their response was tremendous. They really felt like we handled it very well and humanized her. And then, even one of the reviews said that, she's the probably original Me Too, victim. And
yes.
that really it's yeah. about giving a voice to the voiceless,
Mark, so, I don't know if this is true. This is a pretty serious accusation, but I recall hearing that the Gopecki family actually was in part paid off by the Kennedys to not continue demanding whatever
yeah.
they might demand from
yeah.
Senator Kennedy. Do you know anything about that?
We'd heard different things too, that we knew that they were very supportive of the Kennedys and that initially they understood that was an accident and they didn't, there wasn't much that went into it. I think after the inquest, I think they realized that Ted wasn't as forthcoming as they had thought. And whether it was insurance money or some money given from the Kennedy family, we don't know for sure. But it really didn't go too much further than that. There was no like wrongful death suit or anything like that. But, the family was distraught. Again, I don't know. Hush. You can't bring someone back. But there were statements after that the family was not happy with his actions or, what they felt like was really the truth in this.
As you got into the story, you read the screenplay and all of that, and then you got more information about it. What part of this story was the most, surprising or shocking to you?
Well, you know, that he didn't report this. I mean, he walked past a house with its light on, you know, it's 50 yards. I mean, he's clearly aware that there's a house. I just think anybody's nature, no matter what kind of condition you're in, you know, if someone is in a car trapped or they think you call and get help. I mean, that's just a natural instinct. That you can't explain away in any way, shape or form. So that was his obviously first mistake. But, you know, again, I don't know what his motives were. Maybe he felt like she was not alive, and maybe he felt like he couldn't report it then because of his own self.
But the scuba diver who found her did not think that was the case. He thought she could have survived. I think he said he could have saved her. Yeah, he said she was there. Yeah. He thinks she was alive between 3 and 4 hours in an air bubble.
Well, probably,
because of the way.
Yeah, probably not that long. You know, he felt like, you know, maybe an hour or two, but again, they could have had somebody there within probably 20, 25 minutes.
Exactly. So, Mark, we may have to take a break, but we'll come back. We're going to come back. Okay. We've got one more little bit of time here, and I want to talk to you about how the movie has been received in some of the screenings and just what it is you're expecting from this. My guest is Mark Chardy. The movie is Chappaquiddick, premiering on April the 6th. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Little over 1 mile away, the car that I was driving on an unlit road went off a narrow bridge, which had no guardrails and was built on a left angle to the road. The car overturned in a deep pond and immediately filled with water. I remember thinking as the cold water rushed in around my head that I was for certain drowning. Then water entered my lungs and I actually felt the sensation of drowning. But somehow I struggled to the surface alive. I made immediate and repeated efforts to save Mary Jo by diving into the strong and murky current, but succeeded only in increasing my state of utter exhaustion and alarm. My conduct and conversations during the next several hours, to the extent that I can remember them, make no sense to me at all. Although my doctors informed me that I suffered a cerebral concussion as well as shock, I do not seek to escape responsibility for my actions by placing the blame either on the physical and emotional trauma brought on by the accident or on anyone else.
All right, so that's the actual voice of Senator Ted Kennedy right after, not long after the accident. That's July of 1969. That's when the accident happened, same month. Mark Chardy just has made a movie about this incident when the junior senator from Massachusetts went off a bridge. He was a married man with a young woman. They had been at a party together. The car goes off and she drowns, and he leaves the scene of the accident and does not even report it till like 10 o'clock the next morning. And that's kind of the gist of what the movie tells, but it tells a lot more nuance. Mark, as you hear that, isn't that something? I mean, talk about spin. I mean, there's spin.
Yeah. It's amazing that, you know, he gives all the reasons of why he's the victim, and then he says, but that's not an excuse, right? So, again, you analyze the speech. It's unbelievable. I mean, he went to brunch the next morning. So, and he passed a house that he could have kind of gone into, and had he attempted to rescue her, that he would have known that obviously if he had the faculties to do that, he could, you know, go and ring in an emergency a house that could call the police. But, it's not exactly factual probably. But again, he worked with the consistency. He was overwhelmingly voted back into the Senate. And, you know, again, he played the victim a little bit. And I think the press really, really went after him, especially the New York Times and other publications. But no one bought it, but the constituency did of Massachusetts. And listen, to some, he went on and had a very successful and influential career in the Senate for 40 years, considered the lion of the Senate. So, you know, we leave the audience with, you know, okay, he had this, but, you know, if you're a fan of his, you know, was it better that he survived this politically? And, you know, obviously cost him the presidency. But, you know, we leave the audience with that opinion. And, you know, I think it's been received really well on both sides of the aisle, and has been reviewed really well by some so far. I mean, most of the reviews have not come.
Really? Let's talk about that, because I'm really curious to see. I mean, since the movie's not out yet, it's kind of hard to get a strong read on this, but yeah. You've been doing screenings, so yeah. Tell us, what has been the response?
It's been great. I mean, we had an incredible review by Owen Gleiberman from Variety, and, you know, it was almost like a press release. I mean, it was almost exactly our intentions of the film. He pointed out, you know, some of the other, I think the Hollywood Reporter, you know, some of the questions have been like, oh, why make this movie now? What's the point? Right. and I think a lot of fans of Ted Kennedy might ask that. So we know that we're going to have some detractors on the timing of this and why we're doing it and why are we bringing up this. But I think it's important to have movies like this to, you know, to realize that things, you know, that back then, you know, what happened, it's a part of history. And, you know, I think it's just a really interesting point in our history politically.
Mark, I'm assuming that you showed this to the Kopechne family. I know you said like her parents are not living. This has been a lot of years. This was 1969. But did you, I mean, were you present when they watched it, or do you know how they responded?
No, you know, we showed, like I said, I think a couple weeks ago, we showed the Kopechne family. We did a screening, private screening, in I think Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. We did not attend. We wanted to give them their privacy. There were several, you know, relatives and family members present. And yeah, I think they responded incredibly well. And, you know, again, I think they finally feel like Mary Jo got a voice and was humanized and smart, funny. And they were happy with that she finally did, you know, get a voice in all this.
How about the Kennedy family? Did you try to, what did you do with that? That would be a little hard. Have they reached out? Have you had hostility? Had what kind of response from them?
No, nothing at all. We shot in Boston and, you know, we didn't know what to expect when we shot there. We shot a day on Chappaquiddick Island and then we shot the remainder of the movie up in Boston and the North Shore at different locations. And then we actually did our tank work down at Baja Studios in Mexico to recreate the crash in the bridge. But no pushback. You know, I'm sure they're not thrilled with it. It's not a flattering, you know, moment in Ted's life and for his legacy, but it was an important story to tell.
And you're going to be doing a screening in Martha's Vineyard, which is kind of like that's the center of the universe for a lot of the people that would be supporters of Senator Ted Kennedy. So what do you expect there? I mean, in fact, so far, what does it look like? Is anybody coming to the screening?
Three sold out screenings.
Wow.
You know, even when we shot there, I think even people, you know, I think people would like to see the film about it and that we're, all the things are put together in a narrative. And whether you're a fan of Ted's or not, it's not, I don't think it's like if you like Ted Kennedy, you can't see this film. It's not like that at all. You know, but listen, if we can make films, you know, like The Post or about Watergate, then, you know, people should be able to watch this on both sides of the aisle. You know, this is not a left or right movie. But I do think conservative audiences tend to feel like, you know, Hollywood doesn't, you know, make the kind of movies that they want to see. And, you know, this is a chance for conservative audiences to support a movie like this. So more get made, you know.
You know, Mark, I actually think, speaking for conservatives, I'll speak for all of them, of course. But, you know, they really want to know the truth. I think that's the biggest axe that I would have to grind with. I would not see that movie on The Post as much as I love that. Know that intriguing story and would like to hear about it. I do not trust the people that made that movie. So I'm not going to go see it. I want to know the truth, whether it comports to my viewpoint or not. It's the truth we want. And so I appreciate your expression that's what you wanted to portray here. And I think you'll find conservative audiences very respectful of your goal to do that. You know, it can't be easy. Mm-hmm. It can't be easy to cast Ted Kennedy. How did you do that?
Well, interesting question, because, you know, there were a few unnamed actors, like really big actors that love the script, but probably felt like they couldn't touch this role, you know, that it would be too highly charged. We ended up, Jason Clarke, who's an Australian actor, and by the way, very liberal, but he just felt like, you know, he wanted to take this role on, and he was fantastic. I mean, everyone was really, you know, great, and just felt like the script was so good, they wanted to be a part of it. Ed Helms, Jim Gaffigan. It's not like we got a bunch of, you know, Republican actors to do this film. Everyone, you know, our director, very liberal, you know, but they wanted to present this, you know, the facts in a way that was respectful and intriguing and, you know, in a kind of a thriller. So you got to, I applaud, you know, everybody, because it's they were brave in how they approached this film and tried to make it non-political. I didn't know how people would respond to the script. In fact, my friend who's a manager who gave me the script said, this script's really good, but I don't know how Hollywood's going to respond to it. And I thought it was great. Everybody's response was fantastic. Everybody that read it was supportive. So, you know.
Well, Mark, you've got a great track record. You know, you've got great films to your credit. Let me repeat. You've produced The Rookie, Miracle, Invincible, The Game Plan, Secretariat, Million Dollar Arm. I'm sure many more than that. But those are some of your notable movies. Now, Taylor Allen and Andrew Logan are the writers for this. And they're out of, I believe they're out of Texas. Maybe this interview took place in Texas. So do they have that kind of resume, or are they just really gifted guys that we don't know about yet?
No, I don't even think they were in the Writers Guild. I think one of them was an editor. The other one was an independent, you know, producer. And they had never, you know, they wrote a little bit, but they decided to pair up and write this script. So their story is fantastic, you know, and it's now they're really hot writers. The script landed on the blacklist, which is like all the top kind of independent scripts, and, you know, CAA, the biggest agency, just signed them. So yeah, we knew these guys were really talented, and it's fun to watch their career and, you know, discuss, you know, possible Oscar nominations. So it's been fun. And you know, they heard that word and they had no idea what Chappaquiddick was. So for them, it was a history lesson and something really fascinating. So, you know, I think this movie has a little something for everyone. I don't think anybody can complain. I think that Kennedy was treated fairly in this, and emotionally, where it wasn't just, you know, let's go out and, you know, really hammer Ted. I mean, listen, it's an unflattering event. You can't get around that. But I think, you know, you come away with, you know, okay, and understanding what he did in the Senate. And if you're a fan, then, you know, you watch this movie and, you know, you just realize it's a piece of history that happened, you know, in the shadow of the moon landing. I mean, it's really incredible. And you know, the fast paced you know, when I read it, it made my hands sweat. So I knew that was a good thing.
Hey, Mark, where are you from? Are you a Californian?
I grew up in New Jersey, Piscataway, New Jersey, and made my way out. I used to play baseball. And that's probably why I got interested in sports projects. But I live in L.A. now. Yeah.
The only reason I ask you that is because I used to live in Santa Monica, and people that I knew, you know, I love movies, but I have to say that in the last many decades here, a couple of decades, these scripts have become so vapid. You know, the production quality has improved, and, you know, the lighting, the costuming, the computerization, all of that is just off the charts. Meanwhile, characters and dialogue is just in the trash heap for the most part. And someone that I know well in Hollywood said to me, you know, people in Hollywood have just lost touch with normal life, and so they can't really recreate characters that you can actually follow and understand, or that you just have normal interactions. I don't know if you'd agree with that, but I'm thinking that this might be a strength of these writers because they are kind of in a different bubble.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think there are like really great movies like, you know, Darkest Hour, King's Speech, those kinds
that's
of
true.
Movies. That, that
yes.
I like inspirational films for the most part. I mean, that's what I'm drawn to. Usually I'm drawn to true stories. You know, this is not one of those films, but I thought it was just such a great script. I want to be involved in scripts that really move me of all kinds. And a lot of them end up being inspirational and underdog stories. So, yeah, that's what I want to continue doing and doing things that inspire me and, you know, just be involved with really great scripts.
Okay, let me ask you a few questions quickly. Well, before we run out of time, will this be in theaters everywhere so people can see it?
Yeah, it's a wide release starting April 6th, and yeah, it's going to be 1,500 to 2,000 screens, so it'll be everywhere. It'll be in, it's not just specialty theaters. It should be in the Cineplexes in most places. So it's going to be a wide release, and you know, hopefully it'll be supported, and you know, we can keep the momentum going that we have.
All right, how about parents listening? What can teenagers see this? I mean, if you were a strict parent, what would you think about your own movie in regard to that?
Yeah, no, well, it's PG-13, so I made sure that it was PG-13 and not R because I wanted a wider audience and not people to think that it was going down the wrong road. So yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of language in there, but really nothing else that would prohibit anybody from seeing this. Certainly, teenagers on up.
Okay. Well, listen, great to meet you and great to talk to you, Mark. I'm looking forward to seeing this. It's Chappaquiddick. It's coming out April the 6th. And I think in the interest of just knowledge of history, and I certainly have talked about Ted Kennedy a lot at this microphone before he died, it'd just be interesting for all of us to revisit the making of him when he was a young man. This is an interesting story. It was caught America's attention for a long time, I can tell you that. So now maybe some of the mystery will be unlocked. Thanks to Mark Chardy. Mark, thank you for joining us today and telling the story of the story.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks very much, Sandy. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. All right, Sandy Rios, in the morning on AFR Talk.